on Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 812, titled Kim.com and Divine Laissez-Faire Economics. This program is being recorded on August 28th of the year 2014. This will be, at least at first glance, a very strange example of political strange political bedfellows. Kim.com, born Kim Schmidt, is a German national who was engaged in all sorts of criminal activities in Germany. He was a master hacker, then became something of a turned hacker, like Julian Assange, and apparently then was able to get involved in the computer security business. Nonetheless, Kim.com has successfully eluded the legal dragnet despite a fairly impressive array of lawbreaking or chronicle of lawbreaking. One of the questions I have is he in fact an operative of some kind? He is the darling of the libertarian and so-called progressive sector, or at least he was. However, as noted here, let's resume with a little bit of an article, again, from the New Zealand Herald. We close side two with this, from February 4th of 2014, by Chris Barton. Get back to your roots, Kim.com, unquote, and of his arrival in New Zealand. When he first came to New Zealand, he sought out the far right in the shape of John Banks for assistance, that's B-A-N-K-S. He's clearly pro-tax minimization for businesses, evidenced by his setting up Mega Upload in Hong Kong, where it was on a 4% tax rate. It is also plain to see he's a businessman who likes to make obscene amounts of money, flaunt his wealth with extravagant spending, and have servants responding to his beck and call. Hardly the hallmark of a left-winger. I would add that, you know, that there are certainly some left-wingers who go for that sort of thing. However, I think with Kim.com, as with Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, Glenn Greenwald, and the whole crew, and all three of those people appeared either live or via video hookup at one of Kim.com's internet party campaign functions in New Zealand. Again, recall that Julian Assange set up a political party in Australia, one of the Five Eyes countries. Kim.com did the same thing in New Zealand, another of the Five Eyes countries. Both the WikiLeaks party and the Internet party are anti-Five Eyes, and Germany was pushing for inclusion in the Five Eyes in the wake of the Snowden operation. More about the political activities of Kim.com. Again, bear in mind that as soon as he came to New Zealand, he hooked up with John Banks and the ACT party, pronounced ACT UP. More about that relationship from The Guardian of the UK of October 16th of 2014. New Zealand minister resigns over Kim.com donation allegations. It reads in part, a campaign donation by internet entrepreneur and alleged copyright pirate Kim.com has forced the resignation of a New Zealand government minister. John Banks resigned on Wednesday as Minister for Regulatory Reform and Small Business after the Auckland District Court ordered him to stand trial over allegations of electoral fraud relating to Dotcom's $50,000 donation. Banks is accused of knowingly filing a false election return in his failed 2010 Auckland mayoral bid, listing donations from Dotcom and casino operator Sky City Entertainment Group Limited as anonymous when he knew who they were from. That is an offense under the Electoral Act. Some more about Kim.com's political tastes and his views on recreational activities. From the motherboard.vice.com blog of March 27th of 2014, an article by Victoria Turk, that's T-U-R-K, Kim.com launched his political party, and skipping down. Then, according to local news sites, he's been in the awkward position this week of having to defend owning Nazi memorabilia, including a signed copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf, and still more. New Zealand's ruling National Party is re-elected, and this is by Jonathan Hutchinson of the New York Times of September 21st of 2014. Apparently, Kim.com's internet party did not do very well, and here is one of the reasons why. The Internet Monoparty, a political alliance that includes the Internet Party founded and bankrolled by Kim.com, the German entrepreneur accused of widespread internet piracy, failed to win a seat in parliament. Its main candidate, Hone Harawira, H-A-A-R-A-W-I-R-A, lost his local race, and the Internet Monoparty's 1.2% vote fell well short of the 5% needed. The Internet Party leader, Leila Hare, H-A-R-R-E, blamed the National Party for undermining Mr. Harawira's support, but Mr. Dotcom disagreed. Quote, "I take full responsibility for this loss tonight because the brand Kim.com was poisoned. It was poison for what we were trying to achieve," he told reporters. "I did not see that before, and it only became apparent to me in the last couple of weeks." Mr. Dotcom put at least $2.9 million into the Internet Party since May 26, according to Electoral Commission records. A co-leader of the Green Party, Russell Norman, said Mr. Dotcom's presence in the election had tarnished left-leaning parties like his. The Green Party won just 10% of the vote, down from 11% in 2011. "I did say that too, Kim.com," he said. "Remember, I did say a long time ago that it was a bad idea." But anyway, there you go. And one of the questions I have is Kim.com really the lover of human freedom that we are told he is, or is there more to it than that? Again, note that Kim.com apparently has a taste for Nazi memorabilia. He was photographed in a Nazi helmet at an automobile race, and he also owned an autographed copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf, apparently quite rare and quite valuable. And is that simply because of a matter of, quote, taste, unquote, or is it indicative of more vis-a-vis Kim.com? Does that have anything to do with why he has apparently managed to elude any sort of serious legal pushback for the various things that he has done? Now, note again, when Kim.com got to New Zealand, the first place he towards which he gravitated was the ACT Party of John Banks. From the OTA Gosh of August 20th of 2012, this blog called "John Banks Does It Again," and talking of Banks. "These days, he's the sole representative in New Zealand's parliament of the far-right ACT Party, and in a formal coalition with his former National Party buddies." And skipping down, Banks is reported in the New Zealand Herald as declaring, quote, "he believes the Genesis account of the start of life on Earth," telling Radio Rena, R-A-G-N-A, he has, quote, "no doubts the first chapters of Genesis are true." Quote, "God made the world in 6 days with Adam and Eve, his last act of creation." Now, when you look up the ACT Party, their Wikipedia entry, for example, Wikipedia should be used very carefully. It describes it, ACT New Zealand is a free market political party in New Zealand. And again, it basically, according to skipping down, according to former party leader Rodney Hyde, H-I-D-E, the party stands for, quote, individual freedom, personal responsibility, doing the best for our natural environment and for smaller, smarter government in its goals of a prosperous economy, a strong society, and a quality of life that is the envy of the world. The point here being free market. And I can appreciate that a lot of people may have a hard time when I talk about Edward Snowden or Julian Assange or Glenn Greenwald. When you look at these people, their politics actually gravitate to the far right. Eddie Snowden, for example, said basically we should stop sending these effing checks to people who are on Social Security so they'll basically have to get out of their effing hospital beds and go out and work. I can't have to attenuate it slightly. Obviously, we're on the air, and I can't use his verbiage in all its glory. So, again, note that Kim.com gravitates to a free market party of the far right. It's actually redundant when it comes to New Zealand. And underneath the sort of aggressive and very large party animal persona of Kim.com and lying behind idealized philosophy of sort of utopian philosophy of a lot of the users of the Pirate Bay and I'm sure Mega Upload, one finds a far right wing, basically free market philosophy, and it can be seen in relative anarchist circles such as Julian Assange or Kim.com or Eddie the Friendly Spook. Again, with all of these people, they appear to gravitate to the far right. And the notion of laissez-faire economics cuts across an awful lot of economic theory and institution these days. What we're going to do is to take a look at a comparison of the divine laissez-faire philosophy of an organization alternately called the Family or the Fellowship of Abraham Varad. Now, we took a look at this in, for the record, 797. We've taken a look at it in other programs as well. The Fellowship or the Family of Abraham Varad was very close to the Underground Reich and helped in the, quote, rehabilitation, unquote, of individuals and institutions that had been very much involved with the Third Reich and were involved in helping to set up the post-war transatlantic axis that I have spoken about so often, involving both intelligence elements and also industrial and financial powers as well. In the Religion Report broadcast on the Australian Broadcast Company of September 3rd of 2008, there is a good discussion called Elite Fundamentalism, the Fellowship's Gospel of Capitalist Power. And in this, there is a conversation between the host, a fellow named Russell Crittenden, and Jeff Charlotte, who is the author of a book about the family. And in this discussion, we read Stephen Crittenden. Now, the book is basically about a shadowy organization called the Family or the Fellowship that was founded by a guy called Abraham Varad, V-E-R-A-I-D-E, a Norwegian immigrant to the U.S. in the 1930s. Tell us about him and the foundation of his organization, Charlotte. Varad is a fascinating character. This guy who comes to America from Norway because he sees America as the land of the Bible Unchained. Even from a boy, he's given to what he thinks are prophetic visions. He believes that God comes to him and talks to him in very literal words. He comes to America and he makes quite a name for himself, becomes a preacher and starts preaching to guys like Henry Ford and titans of the steel industry and so on, and then has this epiphany, this realization in the middle of our Great Depression in the 1930s. He decides that the Great Depression is actually a punishment from God for disobeying God's law. And how are we disobeying God's law? Well, it's because we are trying to regulate the economy. We are trying to take matters into our own hands. Well, we just have to completely trust God and those he chooses, men like Henry Ford and the CEO of U.S. Steel and so on. Stephen Crittenden. Yes, it's a muscular Christianity. You'd almost say he had a ministry to bring that industrial class back into religion. Jeff Charlotte. Absolutely. This must be a Christianity on steroids. They were building on this tradition of this kind of macho Christ and taking it to these businessmen who didn't really care much about church or the Bible or anything like that. What they cared about was organized labor, and in fact, particularly in Australia, Harry Bridges was a major labor leader here in the United States. And they just saw him as the devil incarnate and began to organize against him. And that's what this group has become and are to this day. They still see God's interests as those of the absolutely unregulated free markets, a sort of macho, muscular Christianity that tends to serve the interests of those involved. And again, we're talking about the Christian organization called the Fellowship or the Family. Again, their economic philosophy could be termed something of a divine laissez-faire economics. Basically, God has smiled on certain individuals and institutions and practices, and it is up to human society to sort of stay out of the way of those who are doing God's work. What we're going to do, and again, bear in mind that in the background are people like the Pirate Bay people, Carl Lundstrom, Julian Assange, Glenn Greenwald, Edward Snowden, and, of course, Kim.com, because their economic philosophy, the whole Palestinian libertarian organization about which I've spoken so often, is, again, free market. We shouldn't interfere in any way with any of this. There doesn't appear to be a religious or theocratic connection with regard to the philosophies of Kim.com or Snowden or Julian Assange, but it is essentially the same philosophy in practice as that of the Fellowship or the Family. Now, we're going to compare that with the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, I can appreciate when I talk about the Muslim Brotherhood as a fascist organization, even though when I discuss its alliance with the Axis in World War II and its use as an anti-communist cadre in the post-war period, that still might leave some people sort of grasping at its essence. Hopefully, I can do a better job with this from Newsweek magazine of July 3rd through 10th of 2006. Newsweek had an article by Stephen Glain, G L as in Larry, A I N as in Nancy, Islam in Office, and it reads in part, "Judeo-Christian sculpture offers little economic instruction. The Book of Deuteronomy, for example, is loaded with edicts on how the faithful should pray, eat, bequeath, keep the holy festivals, and treat slaves and spouses, but it is silent on trade and commerce." Skipping down. In Muslim liturgy, the deals cut in the souk become a metaphor for the contract between God and the faithful. And the business model that Muhammad prescribed, according to Muslim scholars and economists, is very much in the laissez-faire tradition later embraced by the West. Prices were to be set by God alone, anticipating by more than a millennium Adam Smith's referencing the invisible hand of market-based pricing. Skipping down again. The Muslim Brotherhood hails 14th century philosopher Ibn Khaldun as its economic guide. Anticipating supply-side economics, Khaldun, K-H-A-L-D-U-N as in Nancy, argued that cutting taxes raises production and tax revenues, and that state control should be limited to providing water, fire, and free grazing land, the utilities of the ancient world. The World Bank has called Ibn Khaldun the first advocate of privatization. His founding influence is a sign of moderation. If Islamists in power ever do clash with the West, it won't be over commerce. No, indeed, and this is why, when I talk about elements of the transnational corporations and the underground Reich using Islamists as proxy warriors against Russia in the Caucasus and Chechnya, and or against China in Xinjiang province, this is part of the economic philosophy that underlies that support for the Muslim Brotherhood. It is why during the Arab Spring, which was a Western intelligence op, the goal, in my opinion, was to put the Muslim Brotherhood in power wherever they could because of their divine laissez-faire or free market economic philosophy. In For the Record 773, we talked about the Boston Marathon bombing, and I opined that that appeared to be blowback from this ongoing operation from our binary or perhaps fractured intelligence system, even as elements of our military are fighting against Islamists in certain parts of the world, other elements of our national security establishment against the allied with the transnational corporations and the GOP are using those very Islamists as proxy warriors to get their hands on fossil fuels and other things in the heart of the Earth Island in parts of what are now Russia and China. We noted Uncle Ruslan in connection with the Boston Marathon bombing. He is the uncle of both accused bombers and also had set up a congress that the so-called Chechen International that appeared to be an intelligence front that had as its mailing address Graham E. Fuller's former address. Again, Graham Fuller, his daughter was married to the uncle of the Boston Marathon bombers, and he appeared to be working with the uncle in an intelligence front called Chechen or Chechen Congress International. That its mailing address was the same as Graham Fuller's home, and Graham Fuller's daughter had been married to Uncle Ruslan. Graham Fuller, very important intelligence officer, deeply involved with initiating what became the Iran-Contra affair, a major Muslim Brotherhood advocate, and also former CIA station chief in Kabul in Afghanistan. An article by Mark Ames in NSFWCorp.com from June 5th of 2013 quotes Graham Fuller on economic and political philosophy in the Muslim world. And Mark Ames writes in this article called Chechen Power, Fuller comes from that faction of CIA co-warriors who believed and still apparently believe that fundamental Islam, even in its radical jihadi form, does not pose a threat to the West for the simple reason that fundamentalist Islam is conservative, against social justice, against socialism and redistribution of wealth, and in favor of hierarchical socioeconomic structures. Socialism is the common enemy to both capitalist America and to Wahhabi Islam, according to Fuller. According to journalist Robert Dreyfus's book Devil's Game, Fuller explained his attraction to radical Islam in neoliberal, libertarian terms. There is no mainstream Islamic organization with radical social views, he wrote. Classical Islamic theory envisages the role of the state as limited to facilitating the well-being of markets and merchants rather than controlling them. Islamists have always powerfully objected to socialism and communism. Islam has never had problems with the idea that wealth is unevenly distributed, unquote. And that, again, from the former CIA station chief in Kabul and someone very close to the milieu of the Boston Marathon bombers, the accused bombers. And, again, by way of underscoring the degree of confluence between free market GOP philosophy, whether of a secular type or the divine laissez-faire economic theory of the fellowship or the family of Abraham Varad, by the way, very influential in Washington, D.C. today. An article from Salon.com about, again, the Muslim Brotherhood. This from Salon.com of January 25th of the year 2012. It's by Avi Asher Shapiro, A-S-H-E-R hyphen S-C-H-A-P-I-R-O, the GOP Brotherhood of Egypt. While Western alarmists often depict Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood as a shadowy organization with terrorist ties, the Brotherhood's ideology actually has more in common with America's Republican Party than with Al-Qaeda. Few Americans know it, but the Brotherhood is a free market party led by wealthy businessmen whose economic agenda embraces privatization and foreign investment while spurring labor unions and the redistribution of wealth. Like the Republicans in the U.S., the financial interests of the party's leadership of businessmen and professionals diverge sharply from those of its poor, socially conservative followers. The Brotherhood, which did not initially support the revolution in Egypt that began a year ago, reaped its benefits, capturing nearly half the seats in the new parliament, which was seated this week, and vaulting its top leaders into positions of power. Arguably, the most powerful man in the Muslim Brotherhood is Kairat al-Shater, a multimillionaire tycoon whose financial interests extend into electronics, manufacturing, and retail. A strong advocate of privatization, al-Shater is one of a cadre of Muslim Brotherhood businessmen who helped to finance the Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party's impressive electoral victory this winter, and is now crafting the FJP's economic agenda. Well, of course, the Brotherhood was turned out in a military coup. One of the things that we looked at in, for the record, 783, was the allegation that it was actually Kairat al-Shater who was running Mohamed Morsi for the Muslim Brotherhood. It was also Kairat al-Shater who was networking with John McCain and Lindsey Graham, two Republican senators, and then shortly after that allegedly transferred $50 million from the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood to Al-Qaeda. And one should never fail to grasp that Al-Qaeda, like Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, to an extent ISIS and other groups, are offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. Don't fail to use the descriptions for the show. The SpitfireList.com website has all of my work available for download for free. Again, SpitfireList.com. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 812, Kim.com and Divine Laissez-Faire Economics. This is being recorded on September 28th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.